On today's College Football Inquirer, a big win for the College Sports Commission against Nebraska, but could it be a loss if Nebraska's attorney general is properly provoked? Also, there's a Lane Kiffin clause in the SCORE Act now? Ross's Congressional Minute. We'll explain. Plus, yeah, we read the Lane Kiffin Vanity Fair story. We've written a few of these. We'll explain how the sausage is made. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey and Ross Dellinger. Actually, with Ross Dellinger in person. I am Andy Stephens.
Live in person here in the lobby of the Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island, where ACC spring meetings are underway.
Neither Ross nor I is staying at this hotel.
No. It's a little too pricey for us.
A little bit pricey. But Godfrey, we had an adventure last night because news happened, and one of the movers and shakers was here.
Yeah.
Go on.
He seems so interested.
Yeah. If this is what I think it is,
he's enthralled.
Compelling. Go on.
So Brian Seeley, the CEO of the College Sports Commission, was here talking to the various ACC coaches and athletic directors who are assembled here, explaining what it is they do and how it works and what's going on, when an arbitrator ruled in favor of the CSC in this case with Nebraska. And it's a case involving 18 Nebraska football players, deals totaling $1 million. And basically they said, these deals are no good and you have to resubmit them or you can't pay these athletes through these deals. And this was a big moment because we were wondering, how is this first arbitration case going to go? And the CSC won.
Yeah, it was, I think a lot of people were surprised around college athletics. I think they believed that the arbitrator was going to rule for Nebraska and the players. But Andy, and I think you wrote about this, I did a little bit, like there's a lot of questions being asked now about what this truly means if the players can just resubmit their deals and get them through. Really what happened here? And I think Seeley talked a little bit about it, right? Of like, the players can get paid, but they can't get paid in this way.
Yeah.
But if they can get paid in general, then why are we doing all this? That question's being asked.
Right. And that's what I want to talk about. The greater question, and I think probably for everybody listening, watching, everybody's like, why do you guys keep telling us about $40 million rosters and they've got a $21 million cap? And if the thing that's supposed to police the cap is winning, then why isn't everybody at $21 million? And the reason is what Ross was talking about. So what I was shocked by with Brian Seeley, who, by the way, very difficult job. I will come right out and say that. The job he's taken is not easy because of all the different forces we're about to explain. But I'm so used to the NCAA. And look, this is the NCAA by another name. The conference has created it. The school's created it.
Right.
But I'm so used to the NCAA attitude of, you took a free spaghetti dinner, you should rot in jail forever. Yeah. Like reading their infractions reports and stuff. Brian Seeley was very different. He's like, no, the Nebraska players did nothing wrong. We would just like them to resubmit their deals and they can probably get paid.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is a different tone, different vibe.
Much different tone, Godfrey, than you've experienced in years and years of covering NCAA and NCAA investigations. The CSC is handling things in a way that you would expect an entity that feels like it's always sort of on thin ice, with the schools and the conferences. And that's kind of the vibe you got from Seeley. So, you know, Seeley in Nebraska, and I think he said it a little bit yesterday, is they've been corresponding about resubmitting these deals, getting them through, getting them expedited. But if they don't get through in the resubmission, I think you will see probably the attorney general take some kind of action, the attorney general of Nebraska.
Yeah, and Ross and I both talked to people at Nebraska. Nebraska does not want to go to war over this. They don't want to go nuclear. But if they have to, they will. And this is what I wrote in today's story, and I've said this multiple times on the show, and I think we made the definitive list last night, Godfrey. So I want you to check me on this.
Okay.
The schools you cannot mess with if you are afraid that the state's attorney general is going to come after you and blow up your entire organization. Mm-hmm. You may not mess with Tennessee. You may not mess with West Virginia. You may not mess with Missouri. You may not mess with LSU. And oh, by the way, the one you really can't mess with, where 100% of the state's voters will be behind the AG if he defends the state school is Nebraska.
Yeah, and I think that's why I was a little confused when you said news broke, because once you get past the headline, I don't know if this is news for the greater public so much as it is news for us. I'm interested in a couple of things here. There's no precedent. This decision actually doesn't create any kind of precedent. In fact, they went out of their way to say that it is not precedential. That's not presidential. I'm saying precedential, which means...
Yeah, I wasn't sure that was a word either, but...
This doesn't really create a ruling by which other cases could be judged or viewed. Of course, everything is going to hinge for the CSC when they go to the Northern District in California. They have a massive battle in front of them.
Yes.
And then on, you know, that's before we even get into what's going on, as you talked about with the AG in the state of Nebraska. This all just kind of feels like deck chairs. I think it might be noteworthy for us in the industry, but if you're at home and you're confused or you're just fatigued at this concept of perpetual compensation issues, nothing's really changed. These Nebraska players are going to refile. They're going to get paid in a different way, a different model. Probably the most interesting part of this was that they kind of shirked this idea of whether or not the compensation was correct. I don't know if you guys noticed this. It was in a couple of the stories. They conveniently declined to evaluate if this was accurate compensation because they don't want any part in putting out any kind of statement or any kind of basis that could be cited in a potential court ruling of whether or not they felt like the number that these kids were being paid was accurate or commiserate.
I think the news here, Godfrey, if we're looking for the real news, if we want to dig into it, is schools, you can pay whatever you want.
Yes.
Just do the paperwork right.
Just do the paperwork. That's right. Just like find a creative way, and many have, to get things through, to submit a larger quantity of smaller deals, basically. And that's what Nebraska's probably going to end up doing. Now, there's an argument to be made that despite what Seeley said, that this does set precedent. I was on the way here. I was talking to a lawyer who was dumbfounded of why Seeley would release and say that it doesn't set precedent, because he said, and this is what this attorney said, who has plenty of experience in this field, is any ruling by an arbitrator sets precedent. Like any ruling by a judge sets precedent. So like schools will see this and say, well, we can't warehouse. If this arbitrator said no, even though it just applies to Nebraska, in a way, it applies to all of us because we would all do similar warehousing deals.
Yeah.
So I think for the warehousing part of this, which for those listening who doesn't know what the hell warehousing is, which I didn't like 6 months ago, it's just submitting a contract that doesn't have specific activities for the athlete.
Yeah, we
to
bought
do
your
for
NIL
money.
Rights for X dollars, and that's it. We'll assign them later. Right.
So I think schools are going to see that they can't warehouse anymore. Number one, but number two. The arbitrator did rule that the multimedia rights company is an associated entity. To Godfrey's point, the California case or the
that's what the plaintiff attorneys are going after.
That's what the plaintiff attorneys are going after, and they, you know, I'm sure they will see this ruling. I know they have, and I don't know that that's going to impact the magistrate judge, but I'm sure a magistrate judge that's going to be deciding this motion over associated entities is going to go back and look at how the arbitrator ruled on it.
I just think it's so funny that all of this, nothing's going to change other than they've created more paperwork.
Yeah,
like,
basically.
That is the most college football thing in the world. Like, you can do whatever you want, just submit the paperwork properly.
Yeah, right. And Seeley said, right, this isn't about athletes getting paid. It's about athletes how they get paid.
Well, here's the thing. Brian Seeley and his staff don't get paid if a state attorney general sues them and it is found to be what they do is found to be illegal, which if we're talking about even the most general definition of antitrust in the federal federal law or in any state law, what they're doing is illegal. So it's going to blow up if they don't just say, hey guys, submit the paperwork properly and it'll be fine. So if you want to have a $50 million roster, it's fine.
Yeah, it's nothing has really changed here. In fact, the thing that stands out to me is how mush-mouthed the CSC was and how careful they were to sidestep, basically incriminating themselves for what's to come in their sort of ultimate fate. But if you care about the sport, if you're upset or happy about players getting paid, or you're just a fan and you're thinking, hey, do we have to hang with a $20 million payroll or is it 50 or whatever? Nothing's really changed here at all. This is just more, I would say deck chair shuffling. And the problem with this specifically is that I don't know it'll matter at all once they get to California. I don't know if this will have any basis in 3 months.
It may not because the federal court may say no. They can pass however much money they want through the MMR. And I asked Brian Seeley this yesterday. I said, the schools are the ones who clearly want these expensive rosters. They're the ones who partner with these MMR companies who have created the roster, you know, a way to fund the rosters. Like, how do you reconcile that? And he's like, I can't go by what the schools want now. I can only go by what they said when they created us. And I feel bad. I would feel bad for the guy, but then somebody told me his salary, so I don't feel that bad.
Yeah. What I think ultimately is maybe the biggest result for schools and how they fund their rosters of this ruling is that it's just going to make it more difficult. It's just going to make it more difficult to get athletes paid. You have to do more work. You have to put in more work, and you have to find more sponsors.
You're going to find more proxies, and this is already happening with a lot of third parties. Is basically they're just going to add another step to the layering of how they compensate the players. If anything, ironically, this actually makes the whole process more disingenuous because they're going to have to prop up outside entities to funnel this money directly to where they intend. Right. So if you're looking to like claim this as some sort of moral victory, it's actually going to cause more of the corruption that you claim to dislike.
I was actually hoping it would get us some more tractor dealership commercials, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think there'll be some autograph signings. That's what I said to somebody at Nebraska. I said, I look forward to all the meet and greets and autograph signings that you inevitably will be planning now.
And, you know, this is the first of many.
Yeah.
Right. Georgia's arbitration. Georgia is, they have two women athletes who did very low level deals and they were rejected and they're going to arbitration for those deals. That case is more about, I believe it's more about, it involves the associated entity because it involves a sponsor of a school, but it's more about the compensation, the range of compensation, which Godfrey, you mentioned, they didn't really address in the arbitration.
Which they're going to struggle with because you're worth whatever somebody wants to pay you for anything.
And we're going to see, again, just in general, this did create more work. For everybody, not just the schools, but the CSC, because they're going to have a boatload of more arbitrations. In this case, this arbitration case was originally thought that it was going to cost $1.5 million. It ended up costing $750,000, so they got a 50% discount or whatever there. But still, could you imagine who's paying the $750,000, the legal fees? The schools. And Nebraska supported the Nebraska players. So they're paying the CSC to fight against their players, but Nebraska is also funding their players to fight the CSC.
Well, and you know, and the frustrating part I think for Nebraska people is they don't have a $40 million roster. From what I've been told, their roster for 26 is you're looking at high 20s, maybe into the low 30s, depending on how things go. They're pretty mid range for a Big Ten or SEC school, and they're like, "Why are you picking on us?" Like,
this is just one sort of step in the evolution of all the many steps that college sports has to take to get to the end, which we all know what the end is.
Or it's one particularly throaty cough in the middle of a death rattle, honestly. Yeah. I don't think this is really...
I don't know if I'd
categorize this as progress so much.
I was surprised when the email came in because I was like, oh, wow, they did win. But then I was like, wait, did they want to win? Because if they win, it could get real... Like, we'll see. I mean, again, Nebraska, they don't control, the University of Nebraska does not control what the state AG does, but everybody's kind of working together there.
Yeah.
And if somebody misses even a penny of a payment, it's on. So that's why Brian Seeley, I think, was so conciliatory and made, like, went out of his way. The players did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
If they just they can get paid.
Over $1 million if you count both sides of the legal battle here with the member institution, the CSC, and then the funding of the institution that you're fighting. Pretty sure that could fund a tennis program that just got shut down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Sure could for at least a year. That's right. It could fund a tennis program. Yeah, it is absurd when you actually think about it that the school, and I wrote this in a story, like the CSC has asked the schools and the conferences for more money. Because they anticipate if they had won, which they did, they'd anticipate they will have to keep fighting more and more and more of these arbitration cases there. Two Georgia,
you gotta pay. You gotta pay
Seeley,
right?
Others coming.
What's his name? You gotta pay. Yeah, you gotta.
This is like the DEA asking cartels for more money to enforce.
Yeah. You gotta pay Brian Seeley, that poor guy who has such a tough job. He's got to make his CEO salary.
That and his staff. They just got up to 20 people, I think.
You know what?
Best thing about that. College sports will go so out of their way. They will pay so many people to avoid just paying the athletes market rate. Yeah. it's
poor,
insane.
Poor CSC, man. It's like it's like digging ditches out there. Tough work.
Well, they might not be digging them much longer. So,
or they're digging their own.
We'll see what happens with the Nebraska AG with the case. Again, if a penny of payment is missed, then it goes nuclear. But right now, everybody's playing nice, which, again, not used to.
And the Kessler motion lurks. Right now, they requested a hearing May 27th, but I'm told that's going to be pushed back to June at some point.
Yeah, that would be Jeffrey Kessler, the antitrust attorney who has beaten all the schools. He's beaten the NFL.
And he's pretty much everybody. The associated entity concept, and if the judge rules the same way that the arbitrator ruled, then Kessler will lose.
Yeah.
And we'll continue on sort of this journey.
Yeah, but I don't know if the judge is going to feel the same way.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting
to see. When we come back, though, Ross has a congressional minute. And I don't know why Lane Kiffin just gets into everything, but Lane Kiffin's in the halls of Congress these days. He's in the pages of Vanity Fair, halls of Congress. We'll explain. We are back, College Football Inquirer, and of course, I have my timer out because that means it is time for Ross's Congressional Minute. It's a packed minute. So
yeah, now hold on. I haven't practiced this yet, but
I have faith.
I'm just going to go.
Just remember, when I say go, it means go. You're, if you want to, you got to get it in now.
All right,
here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
For a third time in 10 months, the SCORE Act, which is the NCAA-friendly college sports legislation, is on the docket in the House of Representatives. The House Rules Committee meets next Monday, and a vote on the bill could come as soon as next Wednesday. Will it pass? Who knows? House Republican leadership believes it does have the votes. If it didn't, it wouldn't have put it to the docket. But what does this all really mean? Even if a SCORE passes the House, it has no chance, as written currently, of passing the Senate. It must undergo several modifications. Speaking of modifications, Andy, SCORE was modified plenty over the last few months, including new concepts attacking coaching salaries and coaching buyouts in the implementation of the Lane Kiffin rule, which prevents coaches from talking to another school about a job while they're in season at their current job. Meanwhile, in the Senate today, some news. It's a big day. Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti and SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey are on the Hill today meeting with lawmakers in an effort to move along the SCORE Act and push Senators Maria Cantwell and Ted Cruz to reach a deal. They're close. How close? Well, we'll see.
Wow. 2 seconds to spare. Ross's congressional 58 seconds is a banger. All right. Okay. Coaching salaries. Lane Kiffin rule. That's the one where my antenna went up. Yeah. Obviously, this will never happen, and there's no way, but I am intrigued and amused. Like, Godfrey, did you ever think that we'd have a Lane Kiffin rule in a congressional bill?
I just don't think any of this is going to happen, right? I was kind of searching yesterday to see what the likelihood of any of this stuff is actually. I mean, it's not going to work, right? There's a. I found yesterday. I want to give credit where credit's due. There is a Kyle Saunders, who's the Substacker. I just want to read this. He said the committee draft doesn't change the legislative coalition math. The SCORE Act is, quote, half a dozen votes short of Senate passage. We talk about this all the time, so I want to put it in context.
The
Cantwell-Schmidt Sports Broadcasting Act bill remains formally unintroduced 9.5 weeks past the original following week timing line. So, and then to throw one more thing in, the Trump committee proposal is the third instantiation, I butchered that word, of the same comprehensive ask that has been blocked since the entire post-House period. None of this ever happens, okay?
Yes.
My role today is apparently to talk about how none of this is actually going to affect the consumer or anyone who cares outside of the industry.
Here's the thing, Godfrey. Everybody wants to do something about buyouts. coaching buyouts. Everybody wants to do something about coaching salaries.
Right.
And I think this is interesting because it gets to the point we've been trying to make with player compensation and everything else. Why we keep saying this will never happen, what you're suggesting is illegal, all this stuff. Maybe now when it's the coaches that the people love, my coach, maybe now they'll understand how antitrust laws work, because you can't cap coaching salaries either. You can't. And what they want to say is, well, it can only come from certain sources.
Yeah.
You can't really do that.
You can move money around. The whole thing about only using athletic revenue.
Yeah.
Donations for buyouts. I mean, schools can move money around. You see what they're doing right now with paying rosters, moving money and redirecting money. It's kind of absurd. But the Lane Kiffin rule is interesting. It'll be if the SCORE Act does pass the House and it gets to the Senate and it gets brought up in committee, parts of it would have to be added to whatever Senate bill they come up with. I don't think many of these new SCORE modifications, which I have a list of them on my phone, I can read through them, but I don't think most of these modifications to the SCORE Act will make it to any Senate bill.
Yeah.
Number one, requires coach pay to be funded by athletic revenue. Number two, limits coach buyout to donations, as we mentioned earlier. Mandates disclosures of public funds used for athletics. That would might make it through.
That would make it through, right?
And then, of course, the Lane Kiffin rule. And then there are some other things that it tasks the NCAA with doing, which includes the five-year eligibility, which they're already doing, and ensuring athletes spend at least one academic year at a school before transferring. I guess I could see a couple of those being added to a Senate bill.
This is where I'm going to take up Godfrey's mantle here. I was thinking about this as I was getting ready this morning. And I think it sounds like a lot of the issues I have sometimes with my kids when they do the same thing wrong over and over again. Mm. And I remember having a conversation with one of them recently, and it was an issue that had kept popping up. And I think it was my daughter said, well, and we tried multiple different solutions. And my daughter's like, well, what should I do? And I eventually just go, just stop it. Just don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing with the coaching salaries, with the buyouts, with the everything. Just stop it. If you don't want to pay coaches that much, stop it. If you don't want to pay coaches giant buyouts, stop it. There's a great Mad TV sketch where Bob Newhart plays a psychiatrist. And this woman comes in and she's deathly afraid of being buried alive in a box. And she's like, I don't know what to do. I have all this anxiety. And Bob Newhart, he's this long wind up and he says, I'm gonna give you my advice from years of practice. Stop it. And she's like, excuse me? He's like, stop it. And she gets mad and he eventually yells at her, stop it, stop it, stop it, or I'll bury you alive in a box.
Yeah.
And that's like, I want to say that to the ADs.
Yeah.
Just stop.
Well, it's weird because like Congress in these presidential committees are trying to stop it for them.
Yeah.
Because, they can't, because of Godfrey just said, they can't control themselves in this competitive sort of market.
But it's not them.
It's their board members and all. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the governor of Louisiana. It's CEOs of Fortune 500
Booster,
companies.
Board
this
member,
is all a disingenuous argument, and it always has been. The only reason you're asking for any kind of governmental interference for oversight is because you are essentially, I'm talking about you as the AD, you as the school president, you're feckless. You always have been. Nothing's going to change because the moment we burnish these coaches as saviors, we've been in the myth-making business since college football journalism started. These coaches' salaries aren't going to go away. They are introduced as the savior and the solution to every problem. Even Lane Kiffin, even now, in the era where we should be paying quarterbacks, we should be paying running backs the true money to lead programs, we don't want to do that. That's why so many SEC fan bases are so mad right now, is because we are in the statue business of old white dudes as coaches fixing these problems. Nobody said there was a problem at the congressional level, at the federal level. No politician said anything when Jimbo Fisher took the greatest buyout in history. Yeah. And they're never going to pass anything that stops this. By the way, every sports agency in the world is going to push for this not to happen. It's not going to happen anyway, obviously.
Yeah.
But we're in the business of making all these coaches look like superstars. That's not going to change anytime soon.
this is yet another, and I had, because I have friends that aren't in our business, and a friend texted me with the presidential committee recommendations, which also included coaching salary stuff.
Caps on coaching and ND salaries.
And I said, you understand this will never happen. And he's like, why not? I was like, because it's illegal. He's like, but you said that about the player stuff. And I'm like, I was right.
Yeah.
It's illegal. And if you don't want to pay somebody that much, if you don't want to pay that big of a buyout, then don't. Solve your own problems.
Has no one has no one noticed that the key political figures, business figures, leadership, individuals at high levels of leadership in the same university cultures that are bemoaning what we're having to pay athletes now are often the same people who are engineering long-term deals at above-market rates for coaches that basically always include a golden parachute. They are not going to abandon this double standard anytime soon. They're going to fight to the death to keep players from getting paid, but they're never, ever... here's something that the audience can understand sentence.
I would love if Nick Saban were still coaching, because his attitude about this would change entirely.
I don't know if Nick Saban
came after his money.
I don't know if Nick Saban could win 8 games in this environment, and I think Nick Saban knows that. Here's the easiest way to understand any of this stuff.
Clip that one.
The easiest way to understand this is that if you see any proposal, press release, announcement, news report, whatever, that says there's going to be a recommendation or there's going to be action to limit the salary of coaches, you can immediately go blank. You can immediately dismiss that and move on, because that will never, ever, 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 ever happen. Ever.
And again, I don't want them to limit coaching salaries, because I want everybody to get money. I want the coaches to have the ability to make the most money possible. I want the players to have the ability to make the most money possible.
A cap is only accessible legally.
Right.
If you collectively bargain.
And guess what? There ain't going to be a coaches union.
They're trying to cap the athletes, and they've capped through this system, through this settlement, which the attorneys who struck the settlement, of course, will tell you that the settlement was a collectively bargained agreement, which we all know that is not truly accurate.
Nope.
But they're trying to cap it through the settlement. It's clearly not working. And so what's the next sort of answer? Well, if we cap coaches, then we could cap athletes. That's the answer from this presidential committee. And so we'll...
Can you imagine Jimmy
Ross,
Sexton and Jeffrey Kessler getting together to fight? Yeah.
Ross, remind
Jeff in a room. That's a good podcast. Jimmy and Jeff. The
remind
attorney
me
and
again,
the agent. Yes, what Godfrey was.
Ross, remind people again who's actually on that presidential committee. Because
it's no one actually involved
in college sports.
No, there are plenty. Yeah, there are no. So there's 6 committees.
oh, God.
Five each for a particular issue, and then 1 oversight committee. So there's probably overall, there's probably 50 people on these committees.
Aren't there more people with MLB experience than NCAA experience?
I don't know. There are probably more people.
Wait, the sport without a salary cap?
There's probably more people outside working outside of college sports than probably inside. But there's about 8 ADs on the committees. There's probably 6 conference commissioners on the committees. They have added in student athletes.
Oh.
They've added in student athletes on these calls, apparently.
That is brilliant.
But to Godfrey's point, and there are probably 8 university presidents. So you got 8 university presidents, 8 ADs, 6 commissioners. Those are mainly the people that are within college athletics.
Somebody there's on the track team, like, what am I doing here?
There's probably another 25, I guess, that are outside of college athletics. It's kind of split down the middle, Godfrey, I guess, as far as the roster of the people on these committees. But Godfrey,
how many players, Ross?
Well, the players were never listed on the committees. They've been involved.
Okay. Hey, how many people that have ever been tackled? Hey, how many people have ever been tackled on grass wearing a helmet? How many people who have ever been tackled on grass wearing a helmet playing football are on these committees?
Well, let's see. I'm trying to think of some of these ADs who played football.
I was gonna say, there's some former players in there among
probably
those,
a couple, but yeah.
How many in the last 20 years?
Not very many, Godfrey.
How many
not
in the last 25 years?
Yeah, not
any in the last 25 years?
Not that
has anyone who's played the sport of football in the last 25 to 30 years on any of these committees.
Trying to think of a young AD that's on the committee, and
no,
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So so why do I have to be credulous about this?
Does it make you feel, does it make you feel better that the student athletes were recently invited to the calls and had a part to speak and give their opinion and ideas?
I didn't freeze. I have nothing to say. The thing I have to say is this. You don't have to pay attention to this stuff. I'm not trying to undercut the news of this. I'm just trying to protect the consumer who's beyond a fatigue point.
But Godfrey,
consumers of this sport are beyond a fatigue point.
I know, but I need you to say this. We need to say this because there are consumers out there, and I am around them every day, who when the president of the United States or the House of Representatives or the Senate, when they talk about this stuff and they act mm-hmm. like they're going to do something, they actually believe they might. And so it is up to us to explain to them.
Yeah, well, that's
no, they will not.
That's where we're putting in context.
Yeah, we just keep saying no
the
every
news,
time.
You know. So
I know,
but they
keep doing it again, and people keep believing it, and we have to keep popping the balloon.
Yeah, and it's hard. Obviously, I mean, we can go on and on about this subject, but it is hard, maybe impossible, to completely ignore. You can't completely ignore it. So we have to address
like,
it.
What if this passes, by the way, is like John Sumrall going to get arrested for talking to Auburn in Florida while he was coaching Tulane? Like, what are we doing here? Yeah.
Something tells me that very few of the concepts in the presidential committee ideas and very few of the concepts, the new concepts around coaches and the SCORE Act, will find their way into any Senate legislation. Yeah. I think the Senate, Cantwell and Cruz have their own bill, and it may end up being dropped here in the next 2 to 4 weeks. It could.
Yeah.
It's going to be separate from a lot of these other things.
Once you get into the summer, everybody in Congress is going to be a little busy. Yeah.
It's July. So July is the mark that they need something to be introduced and probably something to start working through committee. That's kind of the date circled. And if nothing happens, I think we'll see what we've talked about plenty. What I wrote about at length about in January is a real serious exploration into
reality,
the breakaway of creating your own rules within your conference and sort of moving out from under the NCAA umbrella. That talk continues.
Oh, I love it. We go back to the days when the Big Eight and the Southwest Conference had different signing days, and Barry Switzer would just
You have different rules. Yeah,
Barry Switzer would just wait for the Southwest Conference to sign all his players and just dip in, and Oklahoma would take everybody they wanted. Yep. Oh, I love it. You guys understand all of this has happened before. Just
all history of this will happen again.
Collectively bargain, everybody. But okay, we mentioned the Lane Kiffin rule. Lane Kiffin also in the news again. Vanity Fair profile. Like old school glamour, baby. It was something. And he said something. And we got to talk about this, but in the context of we've all written these before. So we can help you understand how that particular sausage got made. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back with College Football Inquirer, and the news that was causing all the arguments on the internet on Monday, not really news, is people read the Vanity Fair story with Lane Kiffin, and we'd seen the photos, because Lane had put out on Instagram that he was in a Vanity Fair photo shoot, and so it was, everybody's like, what's it going to say? What's he going to say? What's he going to say about leaving Ole Miss for LSU? The thing that got all the headlines was something he said about leaving Ole Miss, coming to LSU, and not having to deal with the Confederate imagery, the racial undertones at Ole Miss anymore versus the diversity in Baton Rouge. And man, did that blow up.
Yeah, that incited a lot of feelings among people. I think we should turn to our resident Ole Miss alum and see what he has to say about this situation, specifically that quote, because we've all been to a lot of SEC campuses and college towns, and we can all say that to a degree, the whole swath of the Southeast is fairly similar when it comes to this issue. So it struck me as odd that he would say what he did.
It's really, really masterful PR. I think one of the things, so before we talk about all this, we're not going to do this credulously. That seems to be the word of the day here. Let's talk about how this article exists and why mm-hmm. Kiffin would agree to it, and then what the strategy is. Also, if you're a sports fan and you're not familiar with Vanity Fair, it is somewhat ironic that this publication is involved, because Vanity Fair has a kind of notorious history in Hollywood of being a go-to benchmark for a image-making puff piece. They're famous mm-hmm. for very, very fawning profiles, usually of celebrities on the way up. And then they, you know, for years under Graydon Carter, their former editor-in-chief, they would do a lot of like really kind of like what we would call the dirty read, investigative journalism on the way down in Hollywood. But they right. were all they were very, very good at what I talked about in the last segment of burnishing a myth, of sort of creating the larger-than-life idea of a profile subject. I don't know why they're doing college football. I'm not familiar with the writer of the piece. And there are four or five details within a very short story that tells me that the writer of the piece is not that familiar with college football.
Yeah, he's a baseball subject.
What are the what are those details?
I'm calling Colonel Reb. Colonel Rebel is one.
Oh, there's one. Colonel Rebel. He makes reference to the Lane Kiffin was run off the road with the police escort anecdote.
Oh, no.
Proven false that was by local media. Right? Yeah, that was fabricated.
Yeah. It's very interesting. So to as you mentioned, Lane Kiffin's old quarterback, Trinidad Chambliss, just had a Vanity Fair profile written by Bomani Jones, who Bomani is not a college football writer, but we all know him. He's very up to date on college football.
Yeah, he's followed it. As we record this, I'll be on his show. I'm taping this afternoon, so it may be Wednesday the 13th that I'll be on his show. Yeah. He's talking about this, actually.
He's incredibly well informed when it comes to college football. Yes. Christopher Smith, the writer, this one appears to be a baseball guy. I think he wrote a book with C.C. Sabathia. But yes, it was very much, I always criticize the New York Times feature section for this, treating something that has a hugely passionate following like it is an extraterrestrial being that has just landed on Earth and you're trying to explain it to the Earthlings.
There's another strange piece before we get, I'll explain why Kiffin's camp and his PR arm did this in a second. There's one other small anecdote. He cites Mark Cuban as sort of the name around the Indiana NIL machine. And if you know anything about Indiana's NIL with football, that's not accurate.
No.
There are several families, one in particular, that drove the NIL push. And really, you know, Mark Cuban's addition to the football NIL initiative at Indiana was very 11th hour. He was skeptical at first. He finally came on. I mean, you could cite John Mellencamp as a celebrity name that probably has more to do with Indiana football's national title than Mark Cuban. So there are little tells in the story if you are in our industry where you think like, oh, okay, this is kind of classic parachute journalism. And then the next structural issue I had was he calls out specifically that I think it's in like the second or third graph, Andy, that he goes, I don't know if I completely believe, I'm paraphrasing here, if I completely believe Kiffin or if he's me. And then he proceeds to again credulously take every claim of Kiffin's without any sort of pushback or refuting, which is kind of classic. No, it was a very classic Vanity Fair piece in that regard. So now I have to do something that's very difficult, Andy. I have to introduce two competing ideas that are both true. Okay, about Kiffin's claim. I'm an alumnus of this university. Okay. I was in that neocon factory at Ole Miss for years. The subject matter that Kiffin references is absolutely true. It is inherently so. And for years, Ole Miss and its real leadership, not necessarily the chancellors, but the real leadership group, the people who make things happen at Ole Miss, both on and off the field, have, I would say, disingenuously managed the PR campaign to try and basically keep an establishment that wants all of that imagery and all the logos and names and everything to stay put while sort of fabricating a lot of false PR to try and act like it's not offensive. They are completely aware of the dog whistle that they blow. Now, all that being said, and I am saying this as a white male alumnus of the University of Mississippi, so by all means, come at me. None of that happened for Lane Kiffin in recruiting at Ole Miss. Correct. None of that happened. So why did that happen?
That era seems to be over.
For it to be presented as a justification for him choosing LSU over Ole Miss is incredibly disingenuous because he had a chance to go to Auburn.
Yes.
Yeah.
If it was that bad, he would have gone to Auburn, which, where, by the way, because as you guys pointed out, almost every SEC school faces these same issues.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Baton Rouge has that. Yeah. I lived in Baton Rouge for 6 years, and I mean that's where, like, you know, I mean, there was enough racial situations in Baton Rouge that this
there's an I know there's an officer. Yeah,
incredibly odd.
I know that during Ed Orgeron's time, yeah, it was an officer involved shooting, and then I believe on the north side of Baton Rouge. Hey, if you want a fun history lesson about Baton Rouge, try and figure out why Interstate 110 falls the way it does. You know who taught
this would
me
be
about
the one that goes from the airport down to
Yeah, try and figure out why it goes the way it does through the neighborhoods through which it does. I don't want to engage all this because it's completely disingenuous. So what we need to talk about is why did Kiffin do this? Kiffin never expected, and I would give him a tiny benefit of the doubt here, that I don't know if anybody would have ever expected that the move from Ole Miss to LSU just as a coaching decision would incur this much criticism. Now, the reason it incurred so much criticism on surface level was because he left a playoff-bound team. And then he made a public sort of stink of things to make it about himself and basically ended up becoming a type of villain that he didn't want to be. He was also shocked, I've been told by several people in his camp, that he kind of thought all this would go away. He kind of thought that him taking the LSU job would restart his PR life cycle, so to speak. And he's been really shocked to see how many people are still leveling criticism against the way he handled that situation. So if you're Lane Kiffin, and you are looking to refresh your image, if you're looking to reestablish a national narrative, you go to a non-sports mainstream publication with a massive audience, and you take a dead bullseye shot at the weakest part of your opponent's armor, which is the inability to progress, let's call it, at the University of Mississippi, and their exposure. He went to a left-leaning liberal institution at Vanity Fair and invoked racism, and guess what? It worked magically because most casual readers are going to have no idea what the actual context of Lane Kiffin's management of Ole Miss was like.
Most people are not actually going to read the story to see what it even the context of the quote was. Because, and this is something that like when I started at Sports Illustrated in 2008, it wasn't something we had to worry about when we wrote a magazine feature. Like if you wrote a magazine feature back then, or even, you know, into the early teens, it sort of stood on its own because that many people got the magazine. So many people would see it. It didn't really matter what was aggregated out of it because people would just see it. That's not how things work anymore. Now it's about what is the piece of the story that you can aggregate. This was the piece of the story you could aggregate.
Yeah.
And I, you know, Godfrey, you painted as a very calculated move by Lane Kiffin. I'm not sure it was. I think it's something that came up and the writer's eyes lit up because he was not getting much from Lane Kiffin, because if you read the rest of the story, there's not much there that people don't already know. And he's like, okay, I got this. And then I don't know, because I don't know this writer. I'm guessing he probably didn't think, oh, this is going to blow up, because I'm looking at where he put it in his story. I think his editors looked at it and went like, okay, here's the part we're going to aggregate.
We're going to pull this out. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, the one thing the story and the quote did was piss the hell off people at Oxford.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they are more angry than ever. And this September game when he returns to Oxford, as one person told me up there, we may have to call in the National Guard.
There are two things I want to bring up here. One, he has tripled down since Andy, so I do believe he is engaged in an actual calculated narrative. He also knew how bad he screwed up because there's a subsequent quote the following day to the writer of the Vanity Fair piece where he tries to backpedal, realizing, and I'll get to that part in the end. I'll explain why he's backpedaling. But literally, as we record this, I'm looking at a quote from On3, and I think Wilson wrote this over at On3.
Yeah.
So he has a long quote. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he has a piece basically saying, it's going to show in year two, year three, why I came here, why this is worth it. Lane Kiffin is involved right now in an aggressive offseason PR campaign to defend his character because he doesn't like the way he's being portrayed publicly. And Lane Kiffin is a terminally online, incredibly insecure individual who constantly does things to see immediately what the ROI can be. And by the way, before you paint him as some sort of racial savior, he was courting Donald Trump with MAGA hats at LSU a month and a half ago. He will play any card necessary to remain in the zeitgeist.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the backtrack, because I thought that was an interesting part of the story. Because, you know, in the story, you have the quote, and then there's a parenthetical right beneath it. The next day, Kiffin reached out to say,
and here's why. And
I can tell you why.
To me, when I was, but that happened to me when I was doing a Lane Kiffin feature.
What does it say? It says he reached out to you. What? What did he say?
He basically tried to soften it.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Yeah.
Here's why. Lane Kiffin, I think, realizes how far out over the cliff he is right now. I also think it's one of the reasons he's contextualizing the message about early success at LSU, because he's starting to understand that the demand at LSU far exceeds any single season at Ole Miss, even last year, even the year before that when they were supposed to be good. He has never in his career been able to match top-level demand with top-level performance. There's context there because of the condition that USC was in, but it is one of the nagging criticisms about Lane Kiffin. But here's the bigger problem. Lane Kiffin, for years, and you can go back as recently as 9 months ago and hear all his fawning quotes about Oxford's home and it saved me and they embraced me when my father died and all this kind of stuff. All of that nonsense pablum that Rebel fans ate up. Oh yeah, we're special. We're Oxford. They ate that up. Lane Kiffin did not lead the calmest or cleanest of lives in the SEC. Lane Kiffin is not someone who's buried his bodies well. To get at what Ross is implying about people being angry in Oxford, he's weaponized an entire fan base of boosters and people with check writing initiative who I can tell you from firsthand experience. I'm just going to have to say this. Maybe we'll bleep it out. The term from Watergate and Richard Nixon is rat. And that's what's going to happen here, because he's essentially weaponized an entire fan base, an entire booster corps against him. And by the way, this booster corps buried his bodies for years in Oxford. They made problems go away. So from a strategic standpoint, I think he realizes how far out over his skis he is. Now, Andy, I want to throw it to you and change the subject slightly.
Okay.
Could you imagine this happening under the management of Mike Slive?
Mm. Well, Mike Slive worked really hard to rein in Lane Kiffin when Lane Kiffin was a first-year, only-year Tennessee coach. He was calling him into the principal's office constantly.
But Andy, next time you guys go on Feinbaum, I'm banned. I'm not allowed on the SEC network. Yeah. Next time you guys go on Feinbaum, just maybe bring up the concept of one of the most visible faces of your brand in the Southeastern Conference. Lane Kiffin, he's in Vanity Fair talking about how another component of your brand in the SEC is a racist institution. Greg Sankey is going to look terminally feckless if he does not intercede publicly and or privately into this matter.
Well, that's what. So one of my colleagues who's covered, you know, this stuff for years and years, that was one of the first things they did was reach out to the conference office.
Because
Kiffin has been reprimanded for statements by the SEC before, but it was about, I think he accused Urban Meyer of something. When Urban was Florida's coach and Lane was Tennessee's coach, and Lane got reprimanded for that. But yes, as you point out, this is you're talking about another institution in the league and making a very nasty accusation.
And we're seeing more of this. I think today,
Steve Sarkisian,
USA Today, Steve Sarkisian attacked Ole Miss for basically having nothing but academically, except basket weaving. Or something for players to, as far as academics are concerned. So we're seeing more of this.
Hey, by the way, I mean, can I say this, Ross? As an alumnus, he's not wrong. One of my sons wants to go to Texas, and I would be so happy if he did. Like the comparison of the degrees is accurate from Sark's standpoint. Yeah. But again, we're talking about a brand here. Yeah. What is Greg Sankey just going to sit on his hands? He's such a genius. That's what I keep hearing from everybody. He's so powerful and influential. His brand is falling apart.
Well, he's got attacks from all sides right now that he's dealing with.
Yes, he does.
I'm not even sure he has time to worry about this.
Andy, what is he going to do about this? If your house is, if there's siege at the wall, which there is from the Big Ten, the 2014 playoff is building a consensus. That's why you guys are in Carolina. And now inside the house, you have this going on. Show me your leadership. Show me why you're such a powerful, effective leader, Greg Sankey. And don't do it on Feinbaum. Get off of Iraqi state media. Go out, talk to people like Ross. Talk to people like Andy. Yes, it is. Talk to people like Ross. Talk to people like Andy. You have never seen the SEC in this position. This is as weak as this conference has ever been.
Yeah. Destin will be interesting.
Yes.
Maybe we'll see that because he talks three different times in Destin.
And it's usually very expansive and pretty open. So
can we get him on the show?
We can sure try.
Try.
We can definitely try. I think you're right, Godfrey. I do think he's probably under intense pressure internally. I imagine if you were the Ole Miss leadership, that is probably the first call you made. You called Birmingham about this. You didn't, because you know what are you gonna? You're not gonna call Lane Kiffin and yell at him. Like that's over. That's water under the bridge. But you are gonna call Birmingham and say, are you going to let the coach at another school say this about our institution?
Yeah. So, I'm sure. Well, you know, Ole Miss's chancellor, Glenn Boyce, sits on the Division I board of directors. I'm sure he's pretty influential in the SEC room. I am sure that he's already made his feelings known to the commissioner, and I'm sure he will in Destin.
Now, from a fan standpoint, I don't think any of that matters.
No.
All that matters is September 19th.
Yes.
That's going to be amazing.
The Texas thing is kind of meh, because also Sark is probably going to have a nice little phone call from a particularly elderly gentleman whose grandson is currently piloting Sark's entire future. Sark is not.
That was a weird one for Sark to go after, given the Mannings. Yeah,
Sark is not as a Sark does not have the tactical wherewithal of a Kiffin. Like Kiffin is, you know, Kiffin's ultimate weakness is vanity. Sark is, I don't know if Sark sees the board as well as Kiffin when it comes to this kind of stuff. So these are two very different situations. But the only thing that they have in common is that if there's a narrative through line of this offseason, especially as you guys are probably going to come out of these meetings today, and I think you're going to see more public unified support of a 2014 playoff, as Greg Sankey is standing on a golf course in Birmingham talking about, like, we don't want, you know, that Oklahoma example he gave in the press the other day about meaningless football games. I've never seen the SEC sieged so effectively and so weak in its narrative branding than we are witnessing right now. That's the through line here. It's not Lane Kiffin calling somebody racist.
It is a different place for that conference. And yes, I am very curious to see what does Jim Phillips say tomorrow when we talk to him. Because the way these meetings work is everybody gets together, they talk and they talk and they talk, and then they figure out what their what their official line's going to be.
Yeah, I can't make it on Thursday's show, but you guys will, I'm sure, talk about what he says on Wednesday about the CSC, the CFP, the Duke Amazon deal.
Yes.
There's a lot of things here that will be interesting to see. We don't see Jim Phillips too much talk publicly, and so this will be an interesting, because usually he goes about 30 minutes or so.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see, will he say, because you know, and you reported this, that what Jim Phillips and Brett Yormark said on that call with the committee about the college football play. Neither one of them has said it into a microphone.
Haven't said it publicly. Neither has Pete Bavakwa, who's here, right, who's on the CFP governance committee. So, you know, and there, to back to Godfrey's point, to wrap this up full circle about Greg Sankey, there's a lot of people that don't want to publicly push back against Greg Sankey.
Right.
And I think that's happening too.
But you've seen enough of it already.
Yeah, it's pretty clear.
From Danny White.
Yeah.
Greg Byrne, who has been as loyal to Greg Sankey as anybody, the Alabama AD, saying that the conference championship game's time has passed. Like, that is...
Yeah. Even in his own room, there's...
That's an act of defiance that would have been unheard of.
Yep. You are the king until you're not.
Yep.
You are the king until you are not. And I think a lot of people smell blood right now.
Is Lane Kiffin the king now?
No.
he's not going, look at me, I am the captain?
According to our president, it's Kurt Cignetti, and I might actually agree with him.
Well, where's Kurt?
He's probably not wrong on that.
Where's Kurt?
Where's Kurt Cignetti?
Kurt Cignetti's response
Kurt
to that
Cignetti?
Is just like, hey, I'm right here. And then Trump brought him in for like a half hug. Very odd, the whole thing.
Yeah. Hey, might be a show. Who's the king of college football right now? Mm-hmm. It's Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah.
All right. We will be back on Thursday. Godfrey and I will be joining you. I will have talked to Jim Phillips at that point. We'll know the ACC's official party line when it comes to the playoff. That'll be very interesting. I'm, as a nerd, very interested in his take on the Amazon Duke deal, because I do think there's a football version of that. We've talked about it on the show. There's a lot there too. So a lot's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, and we'll have a much better idea of where the sport is going, I think, in the next couple of weeks. So come back on Thursday. We'll talk about it all.